Good morning and good afternoon and good evening to everybody joining us from around the world. This is Coffee and Conversations. My name is Marco and my co-host is Lauren. And we'll be taking you on quite a journey today, along with our guests for today. Coffee and Conversations is an interactive sit-down event hosted by CSoft, where we feature honorary guests and experts from a diverse range of industries and fields to lightly discuss topical themes important to the life sciences and the language services industry. So with that, sit down, relax, pour yourself some coffee or tea, and enjoy. In honor of Mental Health Month, this episode of Coffee and Conversations will discuss the art of maintaining motivation in the face of adversity. Today's special guest is someone whose career has taken many unexpected turns, yet he has found a way to adapt each time. Today, he offers his wisdom to people facing the unique hardship that is uncertainty in the light of today's global crisis, and supports us in finding our own way to adapt to our personal and professional journeys. Without further ado, I would like to introduce our special guests, Ruben Payen Jr. Ruben is an American fitness entrepreneur who motivates athletes, coaches, and top business professionals to reach their full potential. As an elite coach and motivational speaker, Ruben frequently taps into his experience conquering the seven summits to inspire others to dream big, take action, and live life to the fullest. In 2007, Ruben moved to China and established Human in Motion, the nation's first functional training performance center. He quickly became one of China's top fitness educators, collaborating with international brands such as the Westin, Nike, the North Face, GQ, and Men's Health magazine. In 2019, Ruben solidified his professional career by coaching mixed martial arts fighter Zhang Weiyi to become a UFC world champion. Since then, Ruben has returned home to the US and is currently mapping out his next big adventure. We are also joined by Mrs. Shun Yi, the president and the CEO of CSoft International and CSoft Health Sciences, leaders in medical translation for all phases of the product's lifecycle, as well as market access consulting, medical writing, and CTD and ECTD submissions with the FDA, EMA, and NMPA. In her 25 plus years of industry experience, Mrs. Yi has been featured in numerous publications, including The Economist, Fortune Magazine, Forbes Asia, and IDG journals. She's also Fortune selected top 10 most powerful women entrepreneurs in 2012, and was identified by CNN Money as one of the technology's 36 most powerful disruptors. In June 2016, Mrs. Yi helped launch the Shenzhen 100 research group, utilizing qualitative indicators to support global market strategies. Her many contributions in the sphere of education include the Johns Hopkins Nanjing US-China Center, Michelle Obama's Let Girls Learn initiative, and her work on the board of trustees at Dexter Southfield School. Additionally, Mrs. Yi serves as a co-chair for the Joslin Diabetes Center's A Taste of Ginger 2022 committee, supporting American Asian Diabetes Initiative, or AADI for short. Welcome, Mrs. Shun Yi and Mr. Ruben Payen. The floor is all yours.
Thank you so much, Marco, for your kind introduction. And good morning, Ruben.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. So I'm sure you have your coffee. I have my coffee. Ruben, I know you for well over a decade. You and I had many different conversations over the years, either on the same stage for a same conference, or during a training in the gym, or attending the same party. So I thought today is quite unique, interesting, because, you know, today is, you know, we were having this conversation virtually. So I wanted my first question, Ruben, to you is, you are someone I know, you're always on something newer, new venture. Marco just gave a fantastic introduction for you to your background. Just to, for those meeting you for the first time in our audience today, and I want to ask you to give me one summary. So what's truly inside you? Mountain climbing, fitness, you know, educator, entrepreneur, inventor, inspirational speakers. Tell us what's really inside you that, you know, make your heart sing most.
Well, you know, to uncover that answer, I really have to go back to when I was a child. And I was sent to live with my grandparents at the young age of 6 months. And I was raised with my aunts and my uncles. So I was raised in a really authentic Hispanic family. My grandmother was a woman of faith. She's responsible for opening the doors to my spirituality. So who I am today is I'm a spiritual person because of her. My grandfather was an extremely hardworking man. He was the sole provider for the family. Now, mind you, there were 9 mouths to feed in the family. So he was a busy guy, but he was dedicated to his family and he was committed to teaching us a strong work ethic. So along with my spirituality, I'm really passionate about working hard, setting goals, and really, really seeing them through.
Ruben, if you remember 2013, when you came down from Mount Everest, you were joining me and sea softers at Sanya. And so on the stage, you told our sea softer, our colleagues from the industry, your story on the top of the Mount Everest. And really kind of for us to understand why mountains, what motivates you to climb. So for today's audience, tell us what happened on the top of the Mount Everest.
Well, fortunately, I've had some time to digest and I'm not so emotional like I was in 2013. So I've been able to put the story in. I'd like to share the story with you in Seasoft and really kind of look at it from both perspectives, look at it as being part of it, and then also look at it as, you know, someone that is just looking in as an observer. And so I think it's important that you kind of understand that being raised in that kind of household, I had to develop some really thick skin. We weren't really allowed to express a lot of emotions and all of those things. That was kind of looked down upon in the household. It was kind of looked at as being weak, right? You know, and then 17 years of age, I went to the Marine Corps. I served in the Marine Corps. And that only added on to that belief system that, hey, if you show vulnerability, or if you show like you are in distress and you need help, it was almost like weak. You know, you suck it up, push forward, you know, and deal with it internally. So I kind of carried this. I kind of carried this with me, and I've worked on it. I've gone to leadership programs. I've gone to personal development programs. I've read self-help books. But you know, it's sometimes it's really deep, especially when it's embedded in your childhood. And so I'll share my story of Everest with you. I call it the greatest personal development program I ever put myself through.
So Ruben, that moment you just talk about your belief system, how you grew up, you know, you hold this insight. So tell us the audience on the finally, you submitted to the top of the Mount Everest.
Right.
And then you found yourself snowblinded. It's impossible to come down with one shepherd with you. And tell us that detail, that whole process.
Yeah, so let me explain to you. And I wrote a little story, so I'd like to share the story with you. I spent some time and really looked at all the different parts of my climb, and I'd like to share that with Seasoft this morning with our coffee. It was 9:30 p.m. at high camp, 8,300 meters on the north side of Mount Everest. The wind was blistering cold and our tent was shaking violently. I had just woken up from a power nap and I immediately began eating this high calorie Sherpa porridge that Lhakpa had just made. Now, Lhakpa Geldu Sherpa is one of the most respected climbers in the world. He holds the Guinness Book of World Record for the ascending of Everest in 10 hours and 56 minutes and 46 seconds. He's a super Sherpa. He claimed that this porridge gives you superpowers on the mountains and it'll make you stronger. So I finished two bowls. This was it, our final preparation before our summit push. We would start at 10 p.m. and we would climb throughout the night into the early morning, racing the clock so we would hit the summit just past sunrise, somewhere between 5:30 a.m. and 7 a.m. 9 a.m. is the cutoff. So as you're kind of going up, if you don't make it before 9 a.m., you got to get down. You're limited with oxygen and the time window. So you got to go down. So time is of an essence, right? The pressure's on. I was pumped. My altitude sickness had cleared. The 8 days of vomiting were over and I was ready to conquer the world. The countless hours of preparation had come down to this. Put up, Reuben, or shut up. We were off. Lhakpa and I were towards the front of the line, and he told me that we would have to maintain a faster pace to avoid the traffic jam. I remember reading about traffic jams in the National Geographic articles where dozens of climbers would get caught into the death zone waiting to summit due to overcrowding on the fixed line. It just takes one person to create a traffic jam and the domino effect, which could kill people. But there was no way that I was going to be the cause of a traffic jam. I assured him I was ready for the challenge and I had no problem keeping up. He patted me on the shoulder in approval. I was killing it. My body was running like a finely tuned Italian sports car. One step after another, time perfect with my breaths. It was almost trance-like. It almost felt like I was levitating up the mountain. A few hours passed and the wind started picking up. It was coming down from my right side, so I pulled over my down suit to protect my face. I could feel the wind blasting into my eyes. I blinked rapidly to try to moisten them. My headlamp was directed about 3 feet in front of my boots, and this allowed me to see the heels of the person in front of me. That was a way to gauge if you're keeping pace. If I could keep up with this pace, I knew I was good. We pressed on. A couple hours passed and the climber in front of me slowed down to a standstill. I stopped. I saw that he was navigating towards what appeared to be a climber lying on the ground. I asked myself, who is that? And then it hit me. This was the body of a climber that had died years prior. His body had never been rescued and his remains were partially preserved from the cold. As I passed him, I saw the skin purplish of color. I remember asking myself, what happened to this guy? We continued climbing and the wind showed no signs of slowing down. Still blasting on my face, I could feel my eyes starting to become sticky, almost like they were bonding together. I did my very best to shield them, but with no luck. I sucked it up and kept going. Another 3 hours had passed and I could see the snow was starting to change colors. It was starting to lighten. The darkness was starting to fade and the sun was on its way up. Awesome. We were close to summit. It was at this moment I asked Lhakpa if we could stop so I can put my goggles on. My eyes had been blasted for 7 hours and they needed relief. He said, no problem. We stopped and I put my goggles over my eyes and secured them to my head. I remember thinking, it's only a matter of time before my eyes would adjust to the sunlight and my visibility would be clear. It never happened. My eyes never adjusted to the sun. It was at this moment I realized I had a big problem. I took off my goggles, rubbed my eyes, in another attempt to moisten them. I put them back, but it seemed like my vision got worse. What was going on with my eyes? I thought to myself. I knew the sun was out because of the warmth on my skin, but everything was so blurry. I tried to keep walking in a straight path, but I couldn't. Lakpo immediately stopped me and he asked me, "What's wrong with you?" He clearly knew something wasn't right. I replied, "I can't see. Something's wrong with my eyes." He was very quiet. I asked him, "How much further do we have to the summit?" And he replied, "We have about 20 minutes. My eyes were getting worse by the second, and the more I strained to see, the worse they became. Imagine looking through a triple frosted beer mug. That's how it was 20 minutes before I reached the summit. That's how distorted my vision was. Lakpa suggested that we continue forward, get to the summit, and try to figure it out from there. I didn't have much of a choice in the conversation. I needed him to help me. We reached the summit about 30 minutes later. I could hear the cheers and the joy and the laughter coming from the other climbers. And this was the moment we all been waiting for, a time to celebrate, time to be with one of the greatest accomplishments of our life, but not for me. All I could think about was how the profanity, am I gonna get down from here? Lakpa sat me down and I listened to the climbers in disbelief. I was shocked, I was scared, I was confused, and most of all, I was angry. Hundreds of thoughts racing through my head. Why me? Why here? Why now? And what kind of cruel joke is this? Lakpa pulled out my water bottle so that I can hydrate. I reached in front of my front pocket and I pulled out the banner. I pulled out the Seasoft banner. And I pulled out my powerful human banner. I wanted to make sure that no matter what happened, there was actual proof that I had made it to the top. He agreed and captured a few photos for me. I asked him, "What do you think we should do?" He replied, "I don't know. I've never performed a rescue from the summit of Mount Everest for someone that is blind." That's not good news. I asked him if he can find other Sherpas that could possibly help bring me down to high camp. I told him I would pay them a premium. He agreed to try to find someone, but there was nobody available. Now I'm freaking out. A rush of questions passed through my mind. Was this guy gonna leave me here? Is this where I'm gonna die? Was I just gonna be like that dead climber that I had seen earlier as we were making our summit push? What do I tell my family? What do I say to my son? A few moments passed. I was actually afraid to ask him, but I figured I better get it over with. I said, "Lakpa, what do you wanna do?" He said, "Let's try." Now I knew the risk of him attempting to get me down by himself. One slip on my part and we were both dead. He has children, a beautiful family. I had met them in Seattle about 6 months prior. He would lock his harness in close with mine. And this was a game of centimeters. If I screwed up, it was over. I told him I would follow your instructions 100% exactly. You tell me how much to move and I'll move that distance. It was terrifying. Seasofters, it was terrifying. Every step that I took, I felt like it was my last. This fight went on for a couple of hours, and then we stopped to take our first break. I asked him, "How much longer do we have to high camp?" He said, "I'm not gonna tell you." That was a very clear sign that it was still a long ways. We have to just keep going. While on break, I could hear him talking to someone else. I kind of recognized the voice. It was Rupert, an Austrian climber that I had met 3 weeks prior at Camp One. Now, Rupert was attempting to climb Mount Everest. He was on his way up, and he was only about 45 minutes to reach the summit. He was making his attempt without supplemental oxygen, and so he was in the death zone with no additional support. He was by himself. He came over to me and he said, "Reuben, what's going on?" I said, "Rupert, I'm blind, I can't see." And at that moment, Lakpa said to him, "Rupert, will you help me bring him down?" Now imagine this. You have this stranger that you've met 3 weeks ago. He's on his way up to summit and accomplish one of the greatest moments of his life. He's 45 minutes away. He's not using supplemental oxygen. And someone is in pain. Someone needs help. When Lakpa asked him, "Will you help me bring him down?" there was no way that this guy in my mind would turn around and help me. He spent thousands of dollars in preparation. He's less than an hour away from the summit. He's not using supplemental oxygen. If he turns around to save me, he would lose his chance to summit this season, and he would expose himself to possible death. Seesaw family, I'm here.
So tell us again the ultra mountain climber who really gave up summiting himself.
Yeah, so that's Rupert Hauer.
Yeah.
And that's Lakpa Galu Sherpa. Yeah.
Right. So when you under the top, when you three great or two of them great to join to help you to come down. So tell me exactly the moment when you were thinking through when I remember you were talking about how he locked himself with you. So it's almost every step the move. You have to be so precise because if you miss the one step, you're going to completely, all of you.
Yes. Yes. There was moments where if I made a mistake, I would pull both of them down with me. And so, yeah.
I remember, Reuben, when you come down that was 2013 at the Sanya, our summit, we were talking about that this is not in your belief system. I'm asking help, accepting that fact your life is completely in somebody else's hand. And you have to 100% to follow their instruction. So that whole experience, how did that impact you the years after? Remember, we were talking about the power of vulnerability. Can you elaborate that a little bit, how that experience transformed you?
Yeah, you know, I've always, growing up, you look at vulnerability as being a weakness. And being vulnerable doesn't mean you're weak. There's a lot of power involved. It means you're willing to accept help, whether that's to learn something new, whether that's, in my case, to save my life. So being vulnerable in my eyes is a form of power. It's just the way that I was raised, it was a form of weakness. And so my whole view and my whole world, I got turned upside down in how I look at other people and how I can help other people and how I can be open to receiving help when I need it.
So your interesting, your big American dream realized in China in your 20s. I still remember you and I were talking about how you're arriving in Beijing with two luggages.
Yeah.
And then later on lost that two luggages.
Yeah,
and from that moment, you build your business empire. You become the face of China's fitness industry, really inspire the younger generation, thousands of them, and gaining so much the success. And now you move back to US, back to your town in Seattle. So you remember you and I had a conversation saying having that cultural shock in your own country and feeling lost and knowing you have to restart again. How are you coping with that? And what still motivates you to get up each morning?
You know, it's a different kind of mountain climbing. because I you know, the physical act of climbing, the physical preparation is just putting in the hard work physically. This is the new mountain journey that I'm on. It's the journey of business, where you take all of your life experience and your knowledge and you create products and you create education here at home from ground zero, because nobody really knows about me here in the US. So I'll tell you, when I first arrived, I've been back about 18 months. The first 8 or 9 months was really difficult for me. I was going through some kind of identity crisis, right? But then I realized I had to go back to my roots. And I went back to what my grandparents instilled in me. I looked at all the wonderful relationships that I have and still maintain in China. And I said, you know what? I can create something amazing here too. It's just going to be a step-by-step process. And I'm going to have to be patient, but I'm going to have to be diligent. And I'm going to have to be open to asking for help. And so it's a whole new chapter. It's the journey of business. Can you conquer the Mountain Everest of business?
Yeah. Remember, you know, Ruben, you and I were talking about the K2. Remember that with the last, the climb, we were talking about maybe that mountain, the last mountain, is not meant to be physical.
Right.
It's something less physical. So having that attitude, you know, you are gratitude, you were talking about, I think that's one line you said to me the other day over the phone that really inspired me. You were saying you were willing to give up all the mountain experience to be able to have your dog back. So that's a whole different level, because the Ruben I know in the early years are so about conquering all the mountains. You tattooed each of the dates, you know, of each the summit. And for you being able to saying you are okay to give up the mountain experience just to have your dog back, I feel like that's totally a totally different level. So I want, just to, for managing the time, I do want to kind of time to the last question, you know, before audience go ask some question. So you're in your new venture in the US, which, you know, there's the website would be nice. I don't know whether, you know, Lauren, you could quickly type in stridegym.com, stridegym.com. Yes. And there's a line was saying, fitness is art, movement is your media. So tell me what this venture all about.
So I came back and I sat down and I just kind of had a moment just to reflect on what I wanted to do. And I'm an artist. I love to create things. I love to create products. I love to just create. I fell in love with the creation process. I'm not in love with the marketing process. And so what I've learned is I've learned to find other people that are passionate about those things that I'm not passionate about, and use those gifts and let them do the things that they love to do. So StrideGym is a business based on a download of all of my ideas for products, my ideas for education, all put into one umbrella. So when I was living abroad, I had created maybe 10 or 11 different products, but they kind of all had different names. And when I came back, I just put everything under StrideGym, and it was just a way for me to download. And so.
So Ruben, is there one or two, just, you know, just remember what we're talking about. Is that the one or, you know, the tools you're talking about, how you create it, is the smallest, the pack, when people can travel, and can you show, okay. So
yeah,
what
so
do you do with that?
Yeah, so this is the world's smallest band training system. And so I wanted to create something that was super easy, super convenient, and it kind of felt fashionable. And so it's a little bag, you can put it in your backpack. And when you open it up, it has your whole little system in here for your bands and your training. You can hook it up to your door and you can train anywhere. You can train at your home, you can train in the office, you can train at a hotel. But my whole thing was, it's super lightweight, so it's not an inconvenience to carry, right? And it's super easy to set up. Right now I'm working on the training modules and training program for this product.
Fantastic. And so let me kind of, I do want to wrap up this portion of what, you know, you and I conversation, so we could still leave 10 minutes for the audience. So as a wrap up, so I want to kind of ask you this. So this is, you know, the year number three, the world in a pandemic, and there's still part of the world, the people on the lockdown. There's a war going on. There's a lot of anxiety here in the U.S., inflations, the global, you know, recession concerns, international conflicts, there's shootings. So what are one or two advice you gave to our CSOFTers, our CSOF partners around the world about self-care when facing adversity in life? What are the one or two advice?
Here's my takeaways that I would recommend. This is from personal experience, and this is what I recommend to a lot of my clients and elite athletes. You know, when you deal with elite athletes, it's a different type of mindset. They're locked in. And a lot of times they sacrifice so much of their personal time for the goal. And so what I would highly recommend is you block off something, some time throughout the week, and do something that inspires you, whether that's art, whether that's going to the park. Find some time throughout the week for yourself and do something that inspires you and refuels you. It recharges you, because it doesn't matter which country you come from, where you live in the States. If you turn on the TV, it's kind of depressing. It just starts draining you, it seems like. And so my recommendation to my athletes is get out of the gym, go do something fun, go spend time with family, go spend time with people that you enjoy, and just be present to that moment. There's a difference between doing it and being present while you're doing it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ruben. But there are also the part of the world that people can't even get out of their home, which is really sad. But this is a bring to the conclusion that I really like that quote from you, Ruben. You are saying, you said consciousness is the language we all should speak. Thank you so much, Ruben. Let me hand it over to Marco and Lauren.
Thank you, both of you, for that really fascinating conversation. I feel like it was really eye-opening. And on the topic of working with professional athletes, we have a question. And this question is, what has the experience been like coaching Zhang Wei Li to her UFC strawweight world champion title and helping her become the first ever Chinese champion in UFC history?
The journey has been amazing. You know, just to have the opportunity, there's so many wonderful coaches out there that never get the opportunity, because it seems like the stars need to align. Everybody wants to be a world champion. Those athletes all want to be world champions, but not everybody makes it. So Zhang Wei Li came to me 2012, 2013, when she was, nobody knew about her. And I trained her for free. I said, come on in, because I saw potential in her. And it was just like the mountain journey. We took one fight at a time, one mountain at a time, and the doors opened up. But she has that special it factor. They have to have that it factor to be a champion caliber type athlete.
That's amazing. Thank you for that answer. And one more question. This is a bit more fun. What are some of your favorite foods that are delicious yet surprisingly healthy?
Okay. So anything chocolate with almonds or chocolate with walnuts, preferably dark chocolate with any type of those nuts, I love. You know, I used to be really, really strict with my diet. It was kind of borderline obsessive. And as I've gotten a little older, I kind of have to credit my wonderful partner. She's opened my taste palate to foods, and I've been able to manage both, maintaining a healthy weight and feeling good about myself and really enjoying the foods that she makes. She's a great cook.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. In the interest of time, and it's now 10:46, I think that is just about all the time that we have for questions today. But for the questions that we didn't have time to answer, we'll be sure to address those in a blog post on our website at csoftinternational.com. On behalf of CSoft Health Sciences, we thank you, Mr. Ruben Payan and Ms. Shani Yi for this fascinating, insightful discussion on the topic of maintaining motivation while facing adversity. If you'd like to learn more about Ruben and his next adventure, you can follow him on Instagram at RubenPayanJR. Or if you want to learn more about his business, Stride Gym, you can find more information at stridegym.com. Be sure to keep an eye out for next week's virtual fitness session hosted by CSoft in partnership with personal trainer Mark Comstock. To everyone attending online, wherever you are in the world, we hope you enjoy this installment of Coffee and Conversations. Goodbye, and thank you so much, everybody.